Okay, Ramblers, let's get rambling.
Dow where it is now, everybody wants a piece of the market.
Oh my God, that is funny!
I don't remember asking you a thing.
I'm funny how? I mean funny like I'm a clown, I amuse you?
With all due respect, what the are you talking about?
Oh, I'm sorry, did I break your concentration?
What the is so funny about me? Tell me what's funny.
You represent the idiocy of today.
I did not know that.
English, motherfucker, do you speak it?
Are you listening to me?
How's my shit together?
Nice personality combination, hostile and intolerant.
So that's it then. No one else really knows anything.
Hello, Face Taxi Jacks. I'm Tom Allen. He's Mr. Matt Weber. We're here a couple of minutes late due to an injury crash at Ohio Street, and the Kennedy blacked up. And the same day they decided this happened as they couldn't get the express turned on for some reason, Eddie. So kind of a double hit there, just saying. So we're
didn't help.
No. So here we are. Kevin, how are you?
I'm doing probably better than the people who operate the Kennedy.
Yeah, not so good, eh? So today is the day when the...
Oh, it's, you know, it's always, just as a, you know, a rule of thumb for life is, it's always nice to know somebody sucks worse than you do.
Yes. Yeah, so it's just what I was thinking. Well, the city is going down with this mask mandate today, and I was seeing some people in the city last night, and they are not happy. They think everything is going to go right back in the crapper, basically, because business is horrible anyway downtown. And they don't need anything else. And I don't like, there's so much about this, Kevin. I was boring poor Maddie on the way in, who had a baseball game and went to the bar, so the last thing he needed was listen to me, but he was sentenced to it anyway. Especially when the traffic was bad. Somehow I cannot stop but think there's somewhat of a connection between the insufferable amount of combinations and takeovers and things like that. Business is going out of business and nobody cares about it as long as somebody else is there afterward, like Amazon or somebody. The incredible, what I consider to be, change in wealth that this, all these different programs from government, everybody who thinks they got their $1,200 check thinks that they were taken care of. God, I wish I could have all you people in an economics class for about 4 hours. All this stuff seems to me, it's like some incredibly advanced takeover.
I wish all I could have them all in a Ponzi scheme.
Well, yeah, but it's like some incredibly advanced takeover of, you know, 15 or 20 people that are behind the scenes. Yet, the other hand of it, I can't think that anybody could be that organized to do something like that. But it seems to me, Kevin, wherever you look, it's the same thing going on. It is absolutely a Nazi takeover. I mean, yet when we talk about, now why can't you wear a mask into a restaurant? Because they're going to shut down the restaurant. You don't want to. It's not like you're afraid of some policeman giving you a ticket, or maybe you wouldn't even care. But now we're keep forcing this down on the population to be the policeman. We're going to shut down PTI if we don't get your driver's license, or if you give us a bad driver's license. That's now our responsibility. That kind of thing.
Tom, I'm with you on that, and you covered, you know, a lot of ground in a few sentences.
That's my fault.
You know, first of all, the nonsensical foundation for something like a mask mandate. The best descriptor I've heard about the cloth mask is it's like, you know, throwing a marble at a chain link fence. You know, how well does it stop the marble from getting through? That's about the scientific basis for a mask blocking. But the idea that an effort like this could be this coordinated, I keep looking at it and going, everybody's saying it, everybody's doing the same things, but they couldn't possibly pull this off, could they? I don't know what's going on. I don't know what the end game is here, but you know, I know that we are constantly being asked to do things that have no basis in effectiveness and efficacy in science and anything, and it's a matter of faith. And so many people just buy it, and you know, they buy it on a couple of levels. There are the true believers. Yes, I'm going to wear my mask even when I'm driving all alone. And then you have other people that say, well, you know, how hard is it to do? So just do it because it's easy. Well, yeah, it's pretty easy for me to stand on one leg and hop up and down, too. But, you know, nobody's asking me to do that.
Yet.
Just because it's easy, I'll do it.
Yet. Well, I also have a... People will do what they have to do. And I would recommend everybody, if you have something to do. I'm not worried so much about war and remembrance, but where I read the book, Hermann Wolke, The Winds of War, and Robert Mitchum played it in the miniseries. And again, I know, Kevin, you're my biggest critic when I do any kind of Nazi type of things. But I tell you what, but Kevin, the problem is, if you see what the Nazis did, it's very similar to a good marketing program. Get people saying yes, get people, you know, blah, 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 and just the stuff Manny plays beginning the show.
Yeah, without the direct mail, though, Tom.
Yeah, without the direct mail. But the when you look at the Nazis' treatment of other people, it was Jews, it was Gypsies, it was pretty much anybody from the East, but the Jews were the big thing in Germany for sure. He just didn't take office and all of a sudden start slamming people into boxcars. I mean, even Hitler could not have gotten away with that. It was this gradualism. And every time, and this is detailed pretty good in that book, where, okay, the Jewish doctors couldn't treat Gentiles. They couldn't treat non-Jewish people. So, and everybody, if it's you and you're kind of powerless, you back off and say, okay, I can live like this. Plus, they say it's probably only temporary. And then you guys, I can live like this. I have enough Jewish clients that, even though I lose, you know, 20% or 35% of my clientele, I can still live like this. And then there was a little something else. Then I couldn't own my own property. I had to sell it to somebody else and rent my own house. Then there was something else. It constantly grew. And then there was a lady this morning right before I was picking Maddie up. She's from San Francisco. And now you absolutely have to have you have to check people's vaccination cards. You can't let them in your restaurant. And she says, "Well,
it's in New York."
And she says, "It's way better than shutting down." Let me help you, people. Freedom is not a negotiation. You know, you can't say anything bad about the government. Well, that's okay. I can still talk to my parents and my friends and my girlfriend. No, it's not okay. it's non-negotiable. Or am I from a different world? I must be.
No, I'm with you 100%. And not only is it chipping away at freedom, it is also segregating people. It's, you know, what it's doing is it's saying, here are the clean people and here are the dirty people.
Yep.
And we must shun the dirty people. And, you know, what's really interesting, or what I find, you know, thoroughly appalling, let's put it that way, about like the New York mandate in San Francisco, is when you look at the numbers of unvaccinated groups. One of the largest groups of unvaccinated people is African Americans. So when de Blasio talks about you have to be experienced to experience the wonders of New York, you have to be vaccinated to be experienced the wonders of New York, what he's really saying is black people can't go to bars and restaurants anymore. Well, welcome to Mississippi in 1950.
Right.
It's just astounding to me, and again, without a solid scientific basis behind it.
Well, Kevin, explain one thing to me on this, and we've been going back and forth with Carl, and obviously Carl's even further to the one side than we are on this, but the thing that I have come to, since I've experienced it, the thing that I've come to believe pretty strongly, that the only people that truly are protected in this, and I'm sure there's somebody who didn't get the antibodies because they're compromised and blah, blah, blah. I'm sure there's somebody that had measles too, that was something wrong with them, that they didn't get the, you know, they didn't become immune afterward or whatever. But the only people that really are safe, and I've been saying this for 2 years now, the people that have already had it, why aren't they going to work? Why aren't they driving the buses? Why aren't they teaching school? They're not going to get it again. I mean, here we are, the two studies I've read, both at the 8-month mark, said everybody's antibodies are as good as the day You got them. That the only people that are really safe from getting even the Delta variant are people who had it before. And it makes absolutely perfect sense because you had the whole virus in you. They're only giving everybody else the scratch protein. So, and that's the part that's mutated.
Yep.
Scratch, spike, what's the difference? But the weird part is, Kevin, I was old enough to have measles, chicken pox, mumps, all that stuff, right? Not old enough to have smallpox, thank God. Because not too many people came out of that one. So, when I go someplace, and I know there's, when Sleepy Joe starts talking about, it's not a problem having this vaccination, that vaccination, he's right about that. I mean, I'm not going to argue with that, but if I go into a restaurant or a school, they don't say, give me proof of your measles vaccination. And I'd say, I already had it. Okay, go on right in. But now, we're not going to believe anybody. You and I can't walk up to a restaurant, a bar, a plane, or anything and say, I already had it. Let me alone. And what's the difference between measles is more deadly?
Well, and what's the insistence on vaccinating people who don't need it? What's behind that? I don't understand. I can't come up with a good conspiracy theory for it.
Other
than to sell more vaccines, but
Google today. When should somebody who have had COVID get the vaccination? And the first 15 doctors will fly out at you and say you should get it the day after you're no longer contagious, like after 10 or 14 days. That is so damn ignorant, I can't even go there. Why? What is the motivation? Are they getting paid by... I mean, they can't really think that, Kevin. They can't. So, I mean, is Merck bought off, Pfizer bought all these people off? I mean, at the very least, I just don't get it. But it's a new low, and we'll shift topics. I go to a club last night. Of course, they're moaning about how they got the mask thing today, and of course, their amount of people going there has dropped dramatically this week, like in anticipation of this mask thing, because they started it 2-3 days ago in the club, sort of like for practice. So I go in the swimming pool, and I'm not a big swimmer, so I use those exercise things in there more than anybody needs to know. But usually, there's nobody in there. So yesterday, this fairly attractive lady walks in, and I'm going, "Hey, this is nice." Plus, she says hello to me, which made it even better. And she's got yoga pants on over her bathing suit, and I'm thinking, I wonder if she's got some kind of skin disease or something. Anyway, she walks over, she takes the yoga pants off, and all of a sudden I look across, she's doing exercise in the pool, she's got a mask on in the pool, Kevin. I'm thinking, what if I splash and her mask gets wet? Is she pissed at me? I'm thinking of now I can't splash because this lady's got a mask and she's not that tall, the 5-foot spots, her head's barely out of the water. I'm thinking, I better behave. And all of a sudden, I'm thinking, this is the dumbest thing I've ever heard. That you can't make the water move in a pool because you're gonna get somebody's mask wet. And she's got to be 20 feet away from me. I mean, did I look that diseased or what? Maybe.
Horrifying, but not diseased.
I mean, yeah. Well, I mean, fortunately, most of me was under the water, but. My head looks okay, I think. I don't know. It doesn't look that bad. But
it's in the right place.
It's on the top of everything. But, I mean, I'm sitting there going, I don't know whether to laugh or cry. I mean, what is she doing? And then this morning, going to pick me, I probably saw 15 people in cars wearing masks by themselves.
What on earth is that going to do for you?
I have no idea. Or maybe you just...
Other than crap up your mask earlier in the day.
The only way I can think of it is I used to play handball with a guy at 6:30 in the morning at Evergreen Bath and Tennis, and the guy would always come fully dressed in his suit. Finally, one day I said, "Larry, what do you dress up for? Only to play handball and shower up?" He goes, "If I don't get fully dressed, I always forget something, a tie or a cuff." So the only way I can stop that is to get fully dressed because it's 5:30 in the morning, and that I guess I can get. So is somebody wearing a mask to make sure they don't leave it at home or what? That's the only logical.
You know, I only have about 10 of them sitting in the car somewhere. So.
Well, yeah. But
you know, just and they've been sitting there for, I don't know, months now. You know, some that I've, you know, never opened the package on.
Well, Kevin, no matter what this...
But a lot of places are handing out those, you know, those paper masks. When I went to the... went to have my normal blood work done before a physical. Oh, it's probably been 6 weeks ago now. The hospital wouldn't let me use my own mask. I had to use theirs, and they gave me one of those, you know, paper on, immediately my glasses started fogging up because I'm just, you know, it just creates these, you know, jet paths for you to really just project out in your, in, when you exhale, not just, you know, not just keep it around you really close. If you're really, it's not stopping anything aerosol, all it's doing is, you know, basically jetting it out farther than it would have gone. And, but you know what? Gotta wear theirs. Gotta, unbelievable. Yeah. And this is our medical establishment. So why is, you know, what is behind all of this?
I don't know, but our media, we got to go to break here in a second, but two things crossed my mind. I'll forget it during break if I don't say it. Two things kind of crossed my path yesterday. One is this guy in Texas, he gets the Delta variant. Now, he's been vaccinated, so he's had the, you know, he's got like the cold symptom, just like everybody else who's getting it that had the vaccination. The press is giddy that this guy is sick, the governor of Texas.
Yeah, what kind of person would be happy someone else got?
Because he's against the mask thing. Now, without any sort of proof whatsoever to the guy. By the way, I caught mine wearing a mask, so that's why I'm sort of on the other side. And the other thing with the press is Maddie was talking today about the presidency may or may not have liked. And I got a picture that was sent for me. It was a question. What former president was drafted by a professional team? They show a picture of Jerry Ford at Michigan. And for those that don't know, Jerry Ford was a All-American, played both ways, played center and linebacker, and was a spectacular football player and a great athlete. Well, he fell once skiing on a tough wood. If you ever skied and you haven't fallen, there's something wrong with you. He played in the pro-am and he shot one into the gallery and bonked somebody on the head. And to this day, everybody thinks the press is convinced the man was a klutz. He was the only elite athlete we've ever had, probably in the Senate we had Bill Bradley in the Senate. Or the White House, and yet the man is considered a klutz. I mean, so between that and the press being happy, the guy, I'm sitting there going, what are we doing here? Anyway, SP Futures down 16, NASDAQ Futures down 26. Tell you what, he looked pretty stud when he was in college, Jerry Ford. Be right back, Stocks and Jacks.
How much confidence do you have that your investments will make you wealthy? Do you truly know the odds? Welcome to Luckbox, the control freak's guide to life, money, and probability. Luckbox shows you how to gauge the likelihood of success before you commit to an investment or any other decision. And Luckbox is free for 1 year at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks. Each new issue dives deep into the current investing climate, separates the signal from the noise with relevant trade ideas, and equips you with cutting-edge tactics you don't already know. Luckbox is the essential magazine for proactive investors who are hell-bent on pursuing life, luxury, and happiness through sports, fitness, travel, food, spirits, music, and a whole lot more. Smart investors don't bet on possibilities, they play the probabilities. Luckbox is $7.99 on newsstands, but you can subscribe for 10 free digital issues at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks. Don't rely on luck. Get Luckbox at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks.
Hello, this is Tom Harrell, the Chief. Confused about investing these days? I suspect you are not alone. Investing was never easy, although at times it may have seemed so. I think one reason behind the current concern, although maybe not explained as such, is how the fluctuation in the American dollar and the associated politics is affecting your investments and your wealth. It may not be enough to make some money in your investments. You may need now to make enough to exceed the amount that your leadership is depreciating the value of the dollars you've worked your whole life to accumulate. That same leadership has seen fit to maneuver risk-free interest rates to near zero. Providing positive risk-averse returns in a zero-interest and declining real wealth environment is by far the toughest assignment I've ever had in my years as a money manager. I'm sure that a lot of you have heard that one way to possibly deal with this problem is to invest in so-called hard currencies like silver and gold, the idea being that they will retain their relative value in the face of devaluation of paper currencies like the dollar. To be honest, I have never been a gold bug. I've always had faith that having enough dollars and a good investment strategy was good enough. Now I'm not so sure. But I do know that if I did invest in gold or silver, I'd want to do it in the same manner as we do with PTI for investments in the market, with defined risk. If you feel the need to invest in gold or silver, we can do it using the same strategies that we use for our protected index program. No matter what you invest in, we feel that you need to know and control your risk. Find us at PTISecurities.com. That's PTISecurities.com.
Stocks, jocks,
stocks and jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
You are out of control.
Right here, right now.
Right here, right now, right now. Hello, North Bay Stocks and Jacks. I'm Tom Howell. He's Mr. Weber on the board. And what did Kathy used to say, Maddie? I'm watching CNBC here, and I am, the term is, I am seething. Is that what the term she used to use? It's an Irish term.
I think she used that, yeah.
I mean, I am absolutely seething. I'll talk about this when we get done. It has to do with the journalism today. And I tell you what, Maddie, if I ever do this, feel free to just turn the mic off. Honestly. I mean, anyway. It's like Sammy Sosa in front of Congress. S&P futures down 16. We've got the NASDAQ down 22. We've actually come back a little bit there. It was down a little bit more than that. Dow's down 142. Individual stocks in the Dow. I don't see any real big clunkers here. There's everybody sort of down. Walmart down 61 cents. Disney down 45. There we go. Goldman Sachs is down almost $2, so that's one of them. But again, the multiplier in the Dow is like 7. So if you're down 1 point, it's like 7 in the Dow. So Dow can be down 100, and it doesn't really mean all that much. In Europe, we've got the DAX down 78.5%, FTSE down 16.2%, CAC around down 24.4%. Asia, we've got the Nikkei down another 1%, 267. Shanghai down 38, that's 1.1%. Hang Seng down 466, that's 1.9. The Hang Seng drops nearly 2%. Again, these guys are getting destroyed on their, like, there was one yesterday, Manny, is the Alibaba or somebody hit their low in the, all the internet stocks and the high-tech stocks in China are getting whacked pretty good. I'm not sure exactly why. Are they blaming regulation? But I have no idea what's going on in China. Dow Jones down 66 yesterday. S&P up 5 and NASDAQ up 15. As we were down a bunch in the morning, we came flying back. Then we kind of leaked a little in the afternoon, but still it was a pretty good day considering we had two horrible days in a row. Bonds unchanged at 1.23. The Bund unchanged at minus 0.49. Japan unchanged at positive 0.01. That was easy. Oil down 44 cents, 63.25. Long way from the 72 or 3 it was not very long ago. Brent down 44 cents, 66.01. Natural gas up 8 cents, 3.91. RBOB down 4, down to 204. Now in danger going below 2 on the RBOB. Wow. And we've got gold up 4.10. Still kind of knocking at the door at this 1800, but can't get over 1787. Silver down 4 cents, 23.19. Copper up a penny, 4.06. And we've got our favorite crypto up 343. Bitcoin is just over 47,000, 47,007. Maddie, what do you got for us? Traffic, weather, sports.
38 minutes past the hour. Good morning to everyone out there. Off to a good start here on a Friday morning, except for the Kennedy. The crash that we dealt with, Chief, is clear now at Ohio, but a lot of congestion still on the Kennedy, especially on the inbound side, just completely jammed up, especially for this hour on a Friday morning. That is an expressway you want to avoid if you can.
Did you ever get the express open?
That I don't know, but the accident's cleared. But still a lot of resulting congestion from that. Edens looks okay. Eisenhower and Stevenson, traffic is starting to build, but no accidents or issues to report there. Southside expressways are all quiet. Same for Lakeshore Drive. Weather today, it's going to be another nice summer day. A little bit warmer, but partly cloudy skies, a high of 84. Right now it's clear and 76 degrees downtown. For our Phoenix listeners, partly cloudy with a high of 98 today. Right now it's clear and 79. In sports, White Sox went for the four-game sweep yesterday, and it was a back-and-forth affair with the A's, but the Sox fell short, losing 5-4. Still take 3 out of 4 in that series. Cubs are off last night. They'll host the Kansas City Royals this afternoon at Wrigley in some interleague action. That's a 1:20 Chicago time first pitch. Diamondbacks beat the Phillies 6-2. Chief.
We don't do this, but Maddie, tweet CNBC, you bleep holes. Same.
What did they do this time?
Well, this is my, as we talk about non-truth in journalism, they start out with their story this morning that 61% of Americans do not pay income taxes. Okay, and we know this, okay? We know this, all right?
You knew it was exactly 62%? I didn't know that.
Well, anybody, it's the numbers about, what did Dan figure it out for us one day, brother, and it's like, if you have a family of four and have a house, you gotta make like 45 or 50 before you have to pay an income tax. Because you got the mortgage deduction and all the other stuff, right? And so, but then, you know, which is one thing. Now, if you explain it the way we are about to explain it, I have no problem with it. But now the next, thing I've got the closed caption, the next thing on there is 100 million people in America don't pay any taxes. Now, is that true? Just ask.
Well, anyone who
say that again?
100 million people do not pay taxes.
Anyone who buys anything pays some tax.
Right.
I mean,
so why?
You buy a Coke, you're paying some tax.
Why do you leave the word income out of that statement? Just to get some hype or what?
Well, there's another aspect to that. There's, what, like 330 million people in this country? How many of them are children?
Well, there's a lot of...
300 million. That would be an interesting clarification, too. How when you say 100 million Americans are not paying taxes, are you saying 100 million out of the adult population?
Well,
or are you just saying 100 million out of 330 million?
That's why for people to think that 24-hour news is news, please, wake up. It's not.
There's too much room for stupid people.
Well, there's too much room for ratings. And well, just let me go through this real quick. In terms of taxes, the income tax revenue is at roughly $2 trillion. All right, this has jumped up the last year, all these stocks going up. Payroll tax revenue, which, by the way, everybody pays, is $1.3 trillion. State revenue is $2.1 trillion, which is actually higher than the federal income tax. Local tax revenue is $1.6 trillion. So income tax revenue is roughly 30% of all taxes paid. Now, corporate tax revenue is only $327 billion, which is like 6 or 7% of the federal total, let alone all the totals, which, I mean, if you're going to say something, now you're never going to see these people ragging on how little the corporate tax is compared to the other stuff. All they can do is tell you it's too high and it's roasting poor AT&T and IBM and Google, right? And you're never going to hear that report. And tariff revenue is up to 66. So to say that these people that don't pay income tax do not pay taxes is absolutely flat-ass wrong. I mean, how else can I describe it, Kevin? You can say they don't pay federal income taxes, and you would be correct. To say they don't pay taxes is, what is your motive here? It's like saying that you and I could be jockeys in the seventh race at Arlington today. We can't be. It's just wrong. They don't have big jockeys, I don't think, and for the horse to turn around and look and say, who the hell is this guy? I mean, what are we doing here? Why do we keep beating up our population day in and day out? And it's an extension of the big lie theory. I mean, if it's on CNBC, it's a national organization. They pay these people a lot of money. It must be true, and it's not. Or it's not true. The impression they're giving you is not true. It's like Sammy Sosa saying, I never injected steroids, and I never broke the laws of the U.S. or Dominican Republic. And everybody says, oh, man, Sammy Sosa said he didn't take steroids. No, he didn't. What he said is he went to Mexico and took a bunch of pills. I mean, what are we capable?
Somebody else injected him.
Well, I got the feeling he wasn't big on needles. I sort of believe that part. If you and I were steroid guys, I don't know if I'd go with the needle part, especially some guy nailing me in the locker room. I mean, most of the times that I have had shots, I pretty was comfortable having a nurse or doctor do it, but not so sure I'd care. I want Maddie doing it, type of thing.
Well, you got Jose Canseco; he was good at it.
He probably was. But I'm saying, why are we continuing to lie to people all day? What is the point? It's the same as our mask argument and our vaccination argument.
Well, yeah, it's exactly what we were discussing. What you're doing is you're separating people. It's us and it's them.
Yes. It's those people don't pay income taxes. They don't make enough money, and they pay all these other taxes. I mean, I don't. So what do we want to do? We want to drop a 20% income tax now on somebody making $45,000 a year? Is that on top of all the other stuff he's paying? Not to mention fees and everything for cars and parking and all the other stuff. But what is the
We need to figure out taxes altogether in this country. It is so messed up now.
What do you think? Back when we were youths, Kevin, there was an organization, and probably still around. Many probably find it, but not in a minute. But there was an organization. Was it called the Federal Tax Day or the something Tax Day? Where every year. I don't know what they calculated in there, but there was a day, man.
Well, there was Tax Freedom Day or something.
Tax Freedom Day, something like that, where you get to like the 10th of May or something, and all of a sudden the announcers would go, "Hey, today's Tax Freedom Day." For the rest of the year, you actually get to keep.
I think you remember it starting out in April.
Yeah, it started like in April, but I'm going to say right now, for somebody say in a high state tax state, who's in the upper bracket of the federal, and maybe bought a nice new car or something for like, you know, whatever, $800,000, whatever they cost now, and, you know, and does some entertaining outside, pays those what do you suppose that number would be? The total percentage, and has a nice house and pays a big property tax. I mean, and say the guy makes, you know, pick a number, $350,000, which, you know, a good number, but, well, right out of the gate, he's probably paying 80 or 90 to the Fed, right? But then he's going to pay another, well, what's the state now? There's some states that are 5 or 6 or 8, right? And then you're going to, then some even have a city tax.
Oh, California, 13.
Okay, so, I mean, what do we, it's got to be, if the guy has a house and buys a car and of course goes out and has either at the grocery store or whatever, although most states cut the grocery store, is a little less. It's gotta be pushing, what do you think it is on the person? It's gotta be pushing 70% or 65% for the last nickel.
Well, and so if you were to go ask the question, just the man on the street type of question is what percentage is too high? There aren't very many people that would say 50% is fair.
No.
There aren't very many people that would say 40% is fair. And yet, when you start adding it up with a lot of people, that percentage is way bigger than that. And yes, in many cases, it is more than half.
Well, when we were in school, and I won't give the years, our buddy the Dinkolo, Professor Dinkolo, said that worldwide, no matter what you do, the governments end up with about 25% of the income. And so the number, he said, really should be like 25%, maybe 30 for the upper people. And here, what are we pushing now? We're God knows where. We start adding. Does anybody else in the world have the combination where you pay federal, state, county, city? I mean, I think in France, when they say, oh, God, the rate in France is like 70% of them. Isn't that the only tax you pay? I mean, I don't know. I mean,
I don't know. I don't know anything about anybody else's tax codes. But I will say that many countries are divided into states, so it would not surprise me if the states were also taxing bodies.
Maybe. We have such an amazing, though. I don't know that, when Tom Foley came and spoke at the CBOE, he said in France, like, the federal government funds the schools, not the local. So if that's the case, even like in elementary and high schools, if that's the case, it was a long time ago, then that makes a huge difference in your taxation right there. Because, 60% of your local stuff or 55 goes for the schools, right? 50 at least, I would think.
Well, yeah, I mean, personally, I favor more, taxation being more local and funding being more local than less. And we have been systematically moving away from that because that puts the accountability close to the voter. It puts it where you can actually interact with people, because when it's the federal government, it's just this big thing that's far away.
I push back on that a little bit. I agree that the control and everything should be local, but I think that there should be somewhat of an evener where you start the year out with like $2,000 from the federal government, so that even if you're in the worst spot in Mississippi, you got something. Because the idea of where people have no money, expecting them to fund the schools like 95% or 100%, I don't see how that works. There needs to be some kind of starter, I think, Kevin. But that doesn't mean that that Biden's kid gets to sit on your school board. There's got to be a somewhat of a middle ground there.
We're more or less agreeing on the approach. You just have a few particulars you would like to see changed, and that's the kind of thing that that rational people would negotiate once they agree on a basic philosophy.
Well, I asked the former Mayor Daley in the club one day when there was nobody else there, and there was a big argument about charter schools, and the teachers' union had hair up their behind about they don't want any money going outside the system and blah blah blah, and the mayor was trying to find a way, because there were a lot of Catholic schools were closing, to get them some money, and he was struggling doing it. And I said, Mayor, the 5 or 6 schools last week, how much money would you need to get them where they would at least have stayed open, not building new gymnasiums or anything? And he goes, Tom, it's about $250 a year. That's the razor's edge on these schools that are closed and are not closing. And he said, if anybody thinks for a second that for that $250 we should let them close, they're out of their mind. And yet, that's what we did. So it's not that much when some of these private schools are. I'm moving, but I don't see how, for instance, where Audrey sold a couple homes out in Park Forest, and not Park Forest, Chicago Heights, and wherever south of there, and the areas are really, really in bad shape, and they've had a couple of the big shopping centers closed, so We're talking about people with houses that are $55,000 in order to pay for the schools. The tax on that house is $5,000. I mean, you can't have that, Kevin, just to pay for it, because the kids have a school mandate. I mean, you need to have $1,000 or $1,500 coming from somewhere for those people to start. Otherwise, how the hell do you ever fix your house? How do you ever, if you're paying, you know, three times, four times as much of your mortgage on your tax bill? I mean, you just can't do that, I don't think. So there's got to be some way of spreading it out just a little. And I'm not asking for, you know, people to wing in $15,000 there. I'm saying, like, there's got to be some small equalizer number that at least does something. I mean, you know what I'm saying? If the idea that a Catholic school is providing all this education starts the year out with zero money when they're providing the same function as Walter Payton, it's getting, you know, $18,000 a year per student of tax money. It's the same function. In Canada, I was there for...
Well, that's how vouchers work.
Well, right. In Canada, whatever the money, the contribution money is, if the school is accredited, your money follows you to where you're going. Now, I'm not saying it should be 100%, but, I mean, a little bit. I mean, the idea that, you know, where you went to? You didn't go to Viators.
No, I went to Loyola.
Loyola? I mean, the idea that you know, somebody should be paying, you know, $25,000 at Loyola and getting not a dime from the state when the parents are paying through the nose in taxes, to me, is unconscionable. You know, I'm not saying that they should pay the $25,000 for you at Loyola, but at least $5,000 of your money that, you know, that would have helped in the public school should chase you to Loyola. It's not like you're not learning algebra there too, right?
Yeah. Well, and that's a normal thing. I deal with that with the what are called the CTE dollars. It's the career oriented programs, and when high school kids actually, you know, there's two kinds of ways that high school kids can get college credit. One of them is dual credit, and that means you accredit the high school teacher with the credentials that pass muster for the college, and then you have to provide some oversight for that, make sure that the course content is good. You have to observe some classes and things like that, and that's dual credit, and then they get college credit as well as high school credit. The other is dual enrollment, where you have to, they actually would enroll at the college, and then those credits have to walk back to the school. Now, when you want to do a dual enrollment model, and why would you do that? You would do that because there's not a lot of demand in every school for it, but when you put them all together, you have a classroom full of students who demand the subject matter, like supply chain management, for example. And then the question is, how do we get paid? How does the college get paid? And there are some schools that set aside the budgetary items for career-oriented training, and they will actually pay the tuition. Penn High School over here does that, for example. And they'll pay the tuition, so the CTE dollars follow the student wherever the student happens to go. And then there are other schools where that money just goes into the general budget, and good luck trying to pry it loose.
Yeah.
You know, to get it back out of the school. In which case you have to find other ways. You know, they can pay for it, their families can pay for it, but a lot of the families can't afford it. In our case, we arranged some scholarships through the school foundation, so that we could cover it that way. But, you know, that whole funding model that we have is, in most cases, is not inclined to let the dollars follow the students. And that's really what needs to happen. That's what vouchers are about. That's what all of it is about. You know, what's the question always is, what's right for the student? And unfortunately, we make a lot of decisions on what's right for the public school system, or what's right for the teachers, or what, you know, anything but the student.
Did I ever tell you my credit story from Notre Dame?
No.
At Marist High School, they
leave time for Kamala Harris.
I will, but I'll make it brief. In my senior year at Marist, they decided to do something just like you're talking about. So they had a teacher that came over from then Fenger Junior College, and then became Olive Harvey, right? And so the guy came into Marist for two semesters my senior year, and I took, you know, South American history, and I don't know what the hell the other one was. But they were college-level courses, so I went to Notre Dame. I'd forgotten all about it, right? So all of a sudden, I go, hey, I should go get my credits for this thing. So I go over to Olive Harvey, which was in a trailer at the time. I get my credits, and senior year, The hockey players were telling me they were going to rent a house the second semester up on the beach in Michigan. So I'm thinking, God, if I could weasel out of a course or two second semester, this would be pretty cool.
Spend some quality time
to be. So I go to my I didn't even have a guy, a guidance counselor. So I go find a guy, and I go, hey, I got these two courses that I'm supposed to be getting credit for, and can I lay off a course here? And he goes, that's terrific, Tom. I give you all the credit in the world. Good job. Get the hell out of here. That was it. Manny, how was that for a conversation?
You got some form of credit.
He goes, good job. Get out of here.
I like that. I give you all the credit in the world. There's your credit.
Yeah, get out of here. Anyway, so what about Kamala?
Kamala's been kind of an entertaining side story this week. First of all, they asked her to do the tour of the Sunday shows last weekend.
She
refused.
Oh, I don't blame her.
She said, no, you are not going to attach this whole mess to me.
Oh, yeah.
And so she absolutely refused. Something that I never would have imagined, say, Pence doing. You know, Pence was always the loyal soldier, whatever else you think of him. He'd do the loyal soldier routine pretty well. But she actually, there's you know, video of this. When she went in April, when the Biden administration announced their new date, you know, they actually, part of the problem that they have is that they changed the date of withdrawal because the president essentially wanted the significance of the final withdrawal being on 9/11. The Trump deal was negotiated earlier, and that kind of set off the Taliban into a bunch of, hey, you broke our deal, we're going to break the deal too types of behaviors. But I digress. When that announcement was made, Harris in April was on State of the Union, and she was asked the question, when the decision was made, were you the last person in the room? Or in other words, were you, you know, the final influence on the decision? And of course she gave it the yeah, I was. You know, because then it was going to be a popular decision. And so, you know, she wanted to take credit. And in fact, since then, went ahead and leaked that they were using her plan. And that was, probably in May. And now she is running like hell from this, doesn't want any part of it, don't want my name to it attached to it, and she's on her way to the Far East right now.
What was this, the Three Stooges episode, Duck, Dodge, Go? Or something like that?
Duck, Dodge, and Hide.
Duck, Dodge, and Hide. It's, yeah, what was this, why would you even want to remind people and do September 11th? I don't get it.
I don't get it either. That makes no sense to me. I mean, this was all negotiated, and now they're trying to say it was Trump's plan. Well, the thing is, you know, we've seen this both from Pence and Pompeo this week. You know what part of the plan was? That when they sat down and negotiated it a long time ago, the plan was, if you violate anything about this, and if you get overly aggressive and try and overthrow the government, you leaders of the Taliban are going to be held personally responsible, and you can expect a visit from Mr. U.S. Drone.
Well,
that was the threat that they gave them, and of course that came off the table too.
Well, we've got a dash here, but the way back in the day, and I don't know how long this is, it happens when you start to age. We used to have a program here, the U.S. government, where if you bought a Boeing plane, say you were United or you're American or somebody, I'm not sure it was only 747s or what it was, but the government would give you extra money to beef up that plane to, I won't say military specs, but a lot more of a plane than you normally, almost like a Secret Service car. That you actually got money from the federal government to, you know, reinforce the bulkheads, do a bunch of stuff. So that plane could be commandeered if ever needed by the armed forces. So explain to me, if we've got 50,000 people to move, which we probably did, how we didn't, with any kind of a plan, say to all these airlines, hey, we need 10 planes, like we've been paying for all these years, or whenever that stopped, I don't know, and fly them all someplace where for the next week, it would have been like a Berlin airlift. Get those people the hell out of there.
Takeoff and landing is not the problem. The problem is that people can't get to the airport because the Taliban holds all the ground between the embassy and the airport, or between places in Kabul where they're hanging out. And they closed the Bagram Air Base.
Right.
They just closed, you know, the limited capacity by closing
that.
I
wasn't saying there weren't other problems. What I said was, how can that be part of a plan?
I don't know if it is or isn't.
Oh, it isn't.
It's not going to do any good. I don't think capacity. I don't think takeoff and landing capacity is their issue at the moment.
Oh, I think what I'm saying. I guess let me finish the story real quick. You tell the Taliban we want 20 miles around the airport as of this date, and if you don't give it to us, by the way, we got these other B-52s hanging somewhere else. And you see where all your leaders are, wherever the hell they are in Pakistan, they're not going to be there anymore. So you're giving us.
Well, they pulled.
You're giving us 90 days or 60 days, and we're going to fly all these planes in there, and we get people the hell out of there, and then we're gone, if that's what we're going to do. But this half-assed deal we got going, we don't have enough C-5As to move 50,000 people, I don't think, do we?
Yeah, don't know what to tell you about that, Tom. I will tell you, though, that they, they're caught by surprise by this, even though the New York Times and CNBC, of all people, have reported in the last 2 days that they totally ignored intelligence telling them to the opposite. What did Lou say? The Taliban didn't read our position papers, so they're not going along with the plan as it was. But you know, the other thing was when they closed the air bases. You know, that's the other thing is the technology that's falling in the hands of people we don't want to have it.
Right.
The other part of the plan was we're going to bomb the base after we close it so that it's, so that there's nothing left behind. And they didn't do that either.
No. All right, Kevin, take care of yourself. SP Futures down 17, NASDAQ Futures down 20. Back with Carl Denninger.
Are you one of the millions of people who suffer with pain? Do you wake up in the morning with stiffness in the lower back or neck? Why are you using medication to cover up the symptoms without treating the actual cause? Painkillers, muscle relaxants, and anti-inflammatories are not the answer. At ChiroMed, physicians are trained to detect the cause of your symptoms and to correct the underlying problem. If you're ready to listen to common sense and do what it takes to make changes in your body that can affect your health for the rest of your life, give ChiroMed a call and set up a complimentary consultation. They are located in Orland Park and can be reached at 708-403-2727. 20,000 patients over 22 years have been treated at ChiroMed, and over 90% of them have had positive results without medication or expensive surgery. Isn't it time you did something good for your body too? Give ChiroMed a call. 708-403-2727. That's 708-403-2727. Let's get you pain-free and living again.
Hi, I'm Audrey Johnson, owner of Home Source Realty and frequent contributor to Stocks and Jocks radio show. If you're thinking about purchasing real estate this summer, could be a good time to shop around. Whether you're a novice or seasoned investor, low interest rates and good inventory make adding bricks and mortar investment to your portfolio an interesting possibility. Many a great fortune has begun with the purchase of property. Call me today for your personal investment consultation, and I would be happy to get you started on your path to prosperity. You can reach me at AudreyJohnson@Realtor.com or call me at 708-349-3456. That's 708-349-3456.
Interested in promoting your business to a high-end audience comprised of entrepreneurs, traders, executives, and the everyday business person? Consider advertising on Stocks and Jocks. With a devout listenership covering the Chicago market, along with a vast online presence, advertising on Stocks and Jocks may be just what it takes to put your business over the top. For more information, contact me, Matt Weber, at matt@stocksandjocks.net. That's matt@stocksandjocks.net.
Hear ye, hear ye! The Homer Broadcasting System is on the air!
Stocks, Jocks.
Stocks and Jocks.
Stocks and Jocks.
You are out of control.
Here, right now. Right here, right now. Right now.
There's something happening here.
Well, and welcome back to Stocks and Jocks. I'm Tom Allen. You're Matt Weber on the board. SP Futures down 16. NASDAQ Futures down 17. Mr. Kyle, how are you? Are you 100% this week, buddy?
I am indeed.
Good for you. You going to go out and get vaccinated now, the day after you have your own antibodies?
I have shots available for anybody that tries to show up with a needle in there. Here, look right here into the camera and wait for the flash.
God. I have some questions for you. My buddies at CNBC were just talking about how all these people don't pay income tax, but then they expanded it to saying that they don't pay taxes, now, which is absolutely a flat-ass lie, but anyway.
Well, of course it is, yeah.
But we have Chicago going back under the mask thing, and some people that are just opened and aren't even really fully open are now very concerned about should they have opened and how far down we're going to go again. And, you know, obviously, you know, time heals all wounds, I guess, at least that's the phrase. How much more can we beat up on some of these areas, Carl, and expect them to come back in any sort of a timely manner? Or people just, I mean, if so many business move from a place because you can't operate there, you can't expect the day open, they all come flying back. I mean, how far away are we from just, you know, the reason why I say this, there's a, you know, this history better me. Tricky Dick's two daughters, one married the Eisenhower kid, right? And the other one married some other guy. And the other guy,
right.
The other guy, how's that for Southside, is in some think tank. And he seems like a pretty bright guy. Anyway, he writes his white paper. The question was, this is 5 years ago. Why are the left and the right fighting the way they are? Why don't people get their act together and figure out that they're all on the same page in a real lot of issues and just get something done? And his conclusion basically was, and actually very well written, I thought, that we haven't hit bottom yet. That, and when you say that, I mean, Dr. J's wife, Bridget McGrath, terrifically, she's a judge, retired now, but for a while she was in divorce court. And she told me that, you know, people fight and they fight and they fight, and almost inevitably, no matter what income strata you are, not everybody, I mean, some people, you know, have it all figured out and they're very amicable, is virtually, if you look at the average, they blow through 40 to 45% of their money on lawyers fighting, and then finally they look at each other and say, if we keep doing this, even though we hate each other, we're not going to have a dime for either one. We got to at least talk for a second. We essentially do hit bottom. Now, and this guy's conclusion is somewhat similar to that, where he said, we haven't hit bottom yet. Are we getting close? Or the money they poured out there to people that haven't quite figured out they're going to have to pay it all back and probably then some. Maybe we're in this, the eye of the hurricane here where people haven't figured that out yet and actually think they're fat and happy. I mean, if you look at the savings numbers on average, the average family saving has gone from like $5,000 to like 50 while they're pouring all this money out. And, we were talking last night with some people, Carl, wish you had been there, regarding all the people that have absolutely gamed this PPP system. And was it really there to be gamed in the first place? Is it just yet another takeover of the few versus the many? I mean, a lot of questions there for you, bud.
Well, I think you're right in a lot of ways. I mean, one of the things I repeatedly pointed out is that back in, you know, February and March of 2020, when we knew basically nothing about this virus, that it was, you know, it started killing people over in Lombardy, over in Italy, right? You know, it wiped out an awful lot of old people really, really fast. And everybody went bananas. And then, of course, we had Kirkland here in Washington State, where, you know, got into that nursing home, and it just laid that entire place waste. And the thing is that when that started, I can understand. You look at that kind of data, you look at, you know, you've got a nursing home, there's 50 old people in there, and all of a sudden 20 of them are dead. Right? And you know, you pull a fire alarm, right? I mean, you know, come on.
Yeah.
I get that. And that's what happened. But then, you know, so we have this short-term bridge, and we try to take care of people, and we try to make sure that the entire world does not go absolutely bananas, and everybody doesn't, you know, it doesn't go nuts. But then the fear megaphone comes out, and part of it is just human nature and the way the media works. It, you know, there's the age old saying, "If it bleeds, it leads," right? And it's always been true. It is not new. But the amplification that you get now with social media and the Rachel Maddows of the world, And the Acostas and everything else, and hyperpolarization from a political perspective means that anything that you can seize on, you can say, this guy's bad, this guy's bad, this guy's bad. And then, oh my gosh, if we've got some dead bodies to go with it. It exploded in everyone's face. And now, nobody, absolutely nobody, will step back and say, what we did here and the path we went down was the wrong road. Because if you do that, then you have to, then what happens is, what do you do with the 500,000 dead bodies that were in no small part caused because you went down the wrong road? Okay.
Right.
What do you do if 1% of Americans decide, I want a head on a plate for that? And I don't care, you know, that you guys don't care about the law. Well, guess what? Neither do I. I want a head on a plate. You killed my grandmother. And,
well, but I mean, the only guy I remember that we ever did anything to was the captain of the Indianapolis. But we've not even written a scathing review of the Iraq fiasco like Britain did. We never go back and say these people screwed up and let's at least not let them be president again or something. We've never done that here.
And look at what's going on over in Afghanistan right now.
Yeah.
Okay, I mean this was a completely predictable disaster.
Well, and
we have a very well defended airfield available to us that we abandoned. All right, that we could have used to get all of the Americans and the contractor and everybody else, get them the blankety blank out of there and let the Taliban go do whatever the heck they want to do. Okay, I mean, you know, let's face it. Afghanistan was never a winnable environment for America or anybody else, and we were stupid to go in there 20 years ago. It was dumb. It started out dumb. It became a make-work project and a way for people to get rich. And oh, by the way, you know, every now and then somebody comes home in a casket, that, you know, that's considered an okay part of the collateral damage because terrorists.
Yeah.
Right, okay, fine. But now, we now have what? We have one little airport in Kabul that has, you know, that's poorly defended because it's, let's face it, it's a civilian installation. It's not a military base. And yet, we literally walked away and left not just Stinger missiles and all sorts of other technology that now these guys have got, and they have the operating systems, and they have the software. They now know how to use this stuff against us. We left Black Hawks over there.
That's unbelievable.
We left fully armed choppers over there in Afghanistan and walked away from them, and we've got, what, 10,000 Americans that are trapped with absolutely no way to get through these guys' lines, and if they get found, they're going to be slaughtered.
Well, I don't see how the hell we let this is. I also want to see a list of the top 20 companies that made money in the last 20 years. And I mean, the influence those people.
Start with Raytheon and everybody else,
yeah.
Right?
Well, I mean, I'm talking about the guys who, the simple stuff nobody thinks about, that managed all the motor pools and served the dinners.
Oh, yeah.
And I mean, didn't Halliburton have a huge piece in that?
Oh, absolutely. And you know what? Here's the other thing too. There are a huge number of people, they'll hate me for saying this, but I'm going to say it. I know people that were former military that got out, that were then turned around and rehired as contractors because they had specific skills. They knew how to fly, they knew how to fix planes, they knew how to do whatever. Okay. Crazy, crazy six-figure incomes to go over there and work. All right. And the first 150 grand or something like that a year of it is tax-free because that's the way that the rules work. All right. So not only are they getting paid like more money than God, on top of that, they're not paying any taxes on any of it.
Well, as you know, I'm always ragging big time about our currency management, right? Money management, that's my big deal, money supply and stuff. I read this blurb the other day, just came across one of my headlines, and I got a million headlines on my email. It had to do with U.S. stopping shipments of paper currency to Afghanistan. Well, if we're leaving, I think we probably should stop that, but one of my friend's kids was telling me he used to walk around with like hundreds of dollars of bills and go to the different tribal chiefs and try and buy them off. And I've anecdotally, I haven't seen anything lately, maybe you have, that way over 50% of the $100 bills that are in circulation are overseas.
And so it's something like 50 or 60%, and I mean, it's because we use them for that sort of a purpose all over the world.
Well, so now are we concerned that one of the reasons now I think we're trying to take currency out of the system is because we don't want these people to be able to use it. So we're going to take our people down here. Our freedom of having currency is going to go down because we were stupid enough to give it. I actually read something one, Carol. What's not the C5? What's the one before? The C-130, the prop job?
Yeah.
Actually,
it was 17. I don't remember which one, but yeah.
But it was, it's been around forever. It can land on short aircraft. It could actually land on dirt and stuff. I think I read somewhere of how many $100 bills you can fit on that plane.
Oh, yeah, jeez. That thing is it's a heavy lift monster. I'm sure that the answer is a huge number.
But it's a finite amount. You know, it's like, right. You know, it's like $10 million or something. Or 20. I mean, it's not like, you know, $40 billion or anything. It's because, you know, there is some weight to it when you start. I wish I could get one of the packets, but then, I mean, the amount, if we had a litany of all the stuff we did, how much cash was passed out to people to buy them off that at the end of the day wouldn't even give us 90 days to get the hell out of there? What an embarrassment, Carl. What an embarrassment. I mean, I'm not talking about we should have conquered the place.
This is the thing. This stuff's been, you know, everybody loves to bag on Biden for this, okay? And you know, including me. But do realize that this stuff goes back way before Joe was anywhere near the White House.
Well, but no, whoa. He's been...
And here's the other thing, too, and maybe the most important aspect of this. We stopped caring about actual military prowess with starred people, okay, all those generals, joint chiefs, especially when you get up in the upper echelons of joint chiefs. Those have been political appointments now for the last 40, 50 years.
Yep.
And so your actual ability to run a battlefield and not get everybody that's under your command killed has absolutely nothing to do with whether or not you have that job anymore.
Well, did you ever read the book Red Storm Rising? It's a Clancy.
Yeah.
Where the Russians were going to invade Germany. You know, whatever happened if the Russians actually, and we kept how many divisions over there for, you know, 30 years, so it wouldn't happen. So the guy says, goes to the generals and he says, all right, I want to be able to invade. I want somebody who can actually run the damn thing, not the bozos we got in there that are generals today. So they found some, like, young brigadier guy, red hair. I remember the fact he had red hair. That's how we identified him on a satellite, and that's when we knew they were serious. He was their best general for tank movement and everything else, and he was like a brigadier, and nobody liked him. He was like their Patton, I mean, maybe without the warts. So they put the guy in charge, and he, like, fires all the rest of the guys and, like, executes half of them because all they were a bunch of corrupt idiots. And I'm sitting there reading this thing, well, I knew the Russian army was corrupt. I wonder if somebody would have had to do the same thing here. I mean, essentially, that's what... I mean, you know this. I think that's what one of our preparations for World War II, the idea that we were totally surprised and shocked and starting from ground zero when the Japanese is sort of untrue. And it's untrue because really of two people. One is Roosevelt and the other is George Marshall. Didn't he put George Marshall
right.
in charge of in like 36 or 37 and he said, look, we need to weed this stuff out. And he had a couple years to make people retire and move, you know, what you call them, peacetime generals out of the way and make colonels retire. He had a 2 or 3 year run where he knew there was a war coming, and the upper echelon of the army and navy were reasonably smoothed out and in wartime shape when this all started, I think. Is it my correct?
Well, to a large degree. I mean, you know, yeah, we quote unquote got surprised. On the other hand, there's a lot of question as to exactly how much of a surprise it really was. But the thing is that we still had our edge because we'd come off World War I. We still had people who were competent within the military and they remembered what it was like to get their butts kicked.
Yeah.
And you know, and getting your butt shot off is not a lot of fun. And so, you know, so there was that institutional memory, if you will, that was still there. We have now gone, what, 70 years okay, without actually having a real no BS shooting war that we've had to get involved in, and you know, not screw around like, you know, like what we did over in Vietnam and Korea and everything else. You know, in real no nonsense, there's bad stuff coming. You better be ready for it.
Well, that's right, and I mean the amount of it, if the American public were to, if you were to say these five firms made this much money, and oh, by the way, this is the total number of $100 bills and 50s that we shipped over there and paid people off, and God knows what they bought with it, and where that money is now. I mean we would be appalled. I think we'd be appalled.
Oh no, you're right. But you know, think about this. This rot is not just at the Joint Chiefs level, and it's not new. Think about what happened a few years ago. What was it? The Fitzgerald, I think, was the name of the ship that literally over by Japan, okay, in the middle of the night with a full crew on watch, hits a commercial container ship.
Yeah, I saw that. Remember?
Okay.
That. Yeah.
Now look, I am just an amateur captain. Okay, I mean I've only owned and run boats into the 25 gross ton range, which is pretty darn big, but it, you know, I mean, you know, 50 foot. But still, I mean, you know, in the grand scheme of things, that's pretty small. Let me tell you something. You can see a container ship with your bare eyes from 15 miles away, and on a radar that's 150 foot up in the air on a mast, you can see a thing for 50 miles.
Yeah, I mean, what do you think the and I'm not gonna blame the millennials. I'm not gonna blame it. Why? Whatever it is, it seems like there's gross incompetency. I mean, the CDC in the Katrina. Well, hey, here's a levee that doesn't look so hot. Don't worry about it.
Yeah, I don't think you could blame the millennials because none of them are actually making those decisions.
Yeah, well, I'm with you. I'm saying it's. I mean, the idea that the entire city of Chicago flooded the basements, and on a report that says this thing's been leaking for what was it, 6 months, Manny? Before the thing actually broke through, I mean.
Oh, look! I lived in Chicago when that happened. It just with eyes agog, going, you know, you guys have been running fiber optic cables through these tunnels for the last 40 years, and you've paid absolutely zero attention to the fact that the structural integrity of these things is questionable.
Well, it wasn't. So the guy drove a pole through it.
Well, he drove a hole in it, but still.
Yeah.
I mean, where are the watertight doors?
Well, you wouldn't. It managed to last forever until this one idiot put a hole through it.
And the point being, nobody ever thought that. Oh boy, all this interconnected stuff together with absolutely no ability to seal any of it off is a bad idea.
Well, there was a report. The thing didn't break through right away. It took 6 months to break through. It was just mud coming through. I mean, so it could have been fixed. I mean, my point is this gross incompetency. I mean, we had people take, you know, the FBI report that we got a bunch of guys taking with mustaches or whatever, flying airplanes, and they don't care if they ever land. The report's in Washington. It never goes anywhere.
The true story about that. I dated a gal who lived south of Tampa.
You found a gal. You found a gal.
Where it is. I actually ran into the dude that owned the flight school where those guys were showing up with wads of $100 bills at the bar. A number of years after that happened, he was a retired Air Force officer.
Really?
He called the FBI. He said, "I got these guys over here. I don't know who in the blankety blank they are." He ran a commercial flight school. It's what he did. He owned a simulator. After he got out of service, he went and he set it up. And his deal was he trained people who wanted to be airline pilots. And these guys are showing up with $100 bills. They have me set up scenarios for them. They don't want to know how to land the plane.
Really?
That's crazy.
And he's like, you know what? I've never seen anybody that wants to be an airline pilot that doesn't want to know how to land. Okay.
You got to go with that, man. But it's kind of an odd, you know. It's like you want to learn how to drive, you don't want to know where the brake is. You know?
Yeah, and here's the thing: is that he called the government and said, "I don't know exactly what's going on, but this is bad. Something terrible is going to happen. You need to get down here. You need to figure out who these people are. They are clearly not Americans, and you know, but they're paying cash. They're peeling off lots of $100 bills for the simulator time because those simulators are not cheap. All right." And he was totally blown off. They completely ignored him.
How many people out of the 20, I mean, the one guy didn't make it, but how many out of the 20 actually learned how to fly the thing? Was it just like four or five?
They all knew how to fly, but that was what they were doing. They were just, you know, look, if you give me 4 or 5 hours in one of those simulators, if I don't need to know how to land the thing because I'm going to run it into a building, I can fly a 737 or a 757. It's not that hard.
Well, my question is, were all 20 trained, or was it just like 5 or 6 because they only going to put, you know, 4 guys in the pilot seat?
Well, I suspect that, you know, most of them probably all did it because, you know, you never know when your buddy is going to be the one that somebody overpowers, and you got to have, you know, you got to have at least one guy who can do it, right?
Right.
Right. So, you know, yeah.
Hey. Again, why are we, and yet you read stuff, World War II, where they claim the entire country, they never had anybody turn, even though they had German spies in the U.S., and we're reading all the mail and everything. They said they never really had a huge spy conspiracy here, where Britain had the Philby thing afterward and things like that. We never, I mean, at least none that was published or we ever caught. I mean, we managed to be competent up and down the line. I mean, I think we're capable. What's happened to us, I guess, is the question.
Well, it's all become grift, all right? I mean, you know, all that matters to any of these people is the money, and they all think that there's no consequence of doing stupid things, and it matters not what the subject is. All right, we have one of the things that COVID has peeled back is the soft underbelly and the insanity of our medical system across the board in this country, and it has nothing to do with an infectious disease. It has to do with the fact that the corruption and the grift and the corporatism. And the, you know, we don't have you know how this used to work. You're old enough. You remember it. If you had something wrong with you, you went and you talked with a doctor, and you got his expert advice or her expert advice, but you're the one that made the decision because it was your butt.
Right.
Okay? And so you came up with a plan to deal with whatever it was that was wrong with you, but at the end of the day, it was your call, it was your choice, and you used that person as an expert resource, which is how it should work. Well, today, it doesn't work that way. Today, as soon as you touch the system anywhere, there's some review board with a bunch of people that you've never met. You have no idea who they are. You have no idea what level of competence they've got. And you have this CPT code. You have this thing wrong with you. And the review board says that these are the things that we're going to do. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, and 6. There's no conversation. There's no talking about anything. This is how it's going to be, period, end of discussion.
Well, I've certainly seen that in the last year. I mean, it's so much different than it was 15 years ago.
Well, and here's the thing. Sometimes, you know, listen, if you get shot or you're in a car accident, okay, we're better at it than anybody else in the world, all right? No argument. But when it comes to everything else, we've destroyed the level of competence and the ability to find answers. And when you got something that doesn't fit into that paradigm because it's new, then what you end up doing is you end up creating a bunch of dead bodies.
Well, I mean, all these new hospitals in Chicago, they are, all you have to do is look at them. I mean, if you're a fourth grader with any kind of common sense, and look at them, where the visitor's rooms are, where the emergency room is, where they're not at all set up for an infectious disease. They're set up for a gunshot wound, a heart attack, or cancer.
Right. Well, but that's because that's typically what happens in Chicago on a Saturday night, right?
Right. But I mean, if there's a new smallpox, by the time you get to a doctor, you're going to infect 100 people in the place. There's restaurants you got to walk by.
And we did absolutely nothing to cut off the vector in healthcare when this thing started, and we knew it was a problem immediately.
I'm gonna say that for a person who caught it at a hospital, or at least I think I did, with a mask on, by the way, I'm gonna say that the New York hospitals were the single biggest source of the COVID back a year ago.
Well, yeah, and you know what? There's the data and the studies that have been done. The data has said that there are exactly two places that matter when it comes to this thing spreading around through people. All right. And that's households, which there's absolutely nothing you can do about. All right.
Right.
And the second one is the medical facilities. And those are the two things. And look, I got it. I beat it. Guess what? I got it. It got brought into my house and I got it.
Do you have any idea what variant?
I'm absolutely. I mean, the only thing that's going, I know where it came from. I know exactly what part of the country it came out of, and it absolutely was Delta.
Okay.
I was not tested, so, you know, no sequencing, whatever, but that 99% certain is Delta.
Okay. Hey, when we come back from break, let's try and put this together for somewhat of an investment decision. I mean, yesterday was kind of right on cue at the third day of the sell-off. We rally in the morning, and now we're kind of heading south here again a little bit, although we've come back, especially in the NASDAQ. We're almost unchanged. We're only down 4. Are we, kind of got this, well, I'm not going to say it till after the break, but I think we have somewhat of a perfect storm where stuff is kind of high right when stuff's starting to hit again. And I don't know. And then we got this Fed. It's got to be worried about these inflation numbers, even if they say they aren't. They can't be that, in a limousine. Anyway, S&P futures up down 15, NASDAQ futures down 4. Be right back, Stocks and Jacks.
How much confidence do you have that your investments will make you wealthy? Do you truly know the odds? Welcome to Luckbox, the control freak's guide to life, money, and probability. Luckbox shows you how to factor in the likelihood of success before you commit to an investment or any other life decision. Your brain is smarter than your gut, and that's why you owe it to yourself to read Luckbox. We've made it easy because Luckbox is free for 1 year at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks. Each new issue dives deep into the current investing climate, separates the signal from the noise with timely, actionable trading ideas, and equips you with savvy investing tactics you don't already know, all while exploring how to live your best life through music, spirits, food, sports, travel, fitness, and a whole lot more. Luckbox is the essential magazine for proactive investors who are hell-bent on controlling their financial futures. It's for overachievers and alpha types who don't buy into Wall Street's investment gurus. It's for mavericks who believe in life, luxury, and the pursuit of happiness. It's for you. Smart investors don't bet on possibilities, they play the probabilities. Luckbox is $7.99 on newsstands, but you can subscribe for 10 free digital issues at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks. Don't rely on luck. Get Luckbox at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks.
Hello, this is Tom Howell, the Chief. We've talked a lot on the show about risk and suitability, about how your portfolio should match your age, income, and risk appetite. It's been hard for investors to maintain that suitability in the last several years due to a Fed strategy that has driven interest rates to virtually zero. You may have even heard that the Fed was trying to drive conservative investors to a riskier portfolio on purpose, for whatever reason. I'm sure you're aware of investors that took some increased risk, such as longer-term fixed income securities, and are now unhappy with that choice. At PTI, we've always stressed total portfolio risk awareness and tried to minimize chasing returns in a tough environment. Well, now it looks like maybe interest rates are moving more towards historical levels. Everyone needs to be aware of what that continued movement might do to your portfolio, both good and bad. We also have a stock market that seems to have stalled, at least for the short term. I think it's time for everyone to take a serious look at their goals, their risks, and their portfolios. Do they match? If not, we can help. We have a signature protected index program. We have ways to hedge against interest risk. We can make that portfolio right for you again. Go to PTISecurities.com or call us right now. The market can change very rapidly. That's PTISecurities.com.
Hi, I'm Audrey Johnson, owner of Home Source Realty and frequent contributor to Stocks and Jocks radio show. If you're thinking about purchasing real estate, this summer could be a good time to shop around. Whether you're a novice or seasoned investor, low interest rates and good inventory make adding bricks and mortar investment to your portfolio an interesting possibility. Many a great fortune has begun with the purchase of property. Call me today for your personal investment consultation, and I would be happy to get you started on your path to prosperity. You can reach me at AudreyJohnson@Realtor.com or call me at 708-349-3456. That's 708-349-3456.
Stocks, Jocks.
Stocks and Jocks.
Stocks and Jocks.
You are out of control.
Right here, right now. Right here, right now.
Low and low price stocks and jacks. I'm Tom Howell. I just Pat Weber on the board. S&P futures down 13. NASDAQ futures up now, up 3. So we've come back on with those guys. Dow futures still down about 125. Individual stocks in the Dow. We got CVX down. It's Chevron down 89 cents. We've got Goldman Sachs down $1.57. Home Depot down 90. Honeywell down $1.40. Nothing huge. JP Morgan down 105. Over in Europe, we've got minor sell-off over here. We've got DAX down 72.5%, FTSE down 9, that's 0.1%, CAC around down 18.3%, so nothing on track for worst week since February, but it doesn't look like it's going to get clobbered today, at least not yet. Nikkei down 267, that's 1%, Shanghai down 38, that's 1.1%, big one down is Hang Seng, down 466, 1.8%, maybe Carl can help us out, is it just what's going on regulatorily over there in Hong Kong? Even though I have other questions for him. As a wave review yesterday, we ended up being kind of mixed. Dow down 66, S&P down up 5, NASDAQ up 15. Bonds, down 1 basis point to 1.23. The Bund unchanged, minus 0.49. Japan unchanged, actually down 1 basis point to positive 0.01. That oil getting smacked again, down almost 2%, Dollar 20, 62.30, the whole number. Brent on $1.18, 65.27, the whole number. Natural gas up 7 to 390. RBOB down a whole nickel to 202, which is a lot for RBOB. For those of you who don't know, RBOB is the retail price of unleaded gasoline in New York Harbor. Gold up 440 to 1787. Silver down 3 cents, 23.20. Copper up a penny, 405. And last but not least, our Bitcoin up 362 to 47,026. What do you got for us, Traffic Weather Sports?
Coming up on 37 minutes past the hour. Good morning once again to everyone out there. We have one significant crash in the area. That's on the outbound Eisenhower right at First Avenue. That's blocking the center lane and causing big backups if you're heading outbound on I-290. So keep that in mind if you're heading out to the western suburbs. Inbound side, a lot of traffic volume, but no accidents to report. Earlier crash on the Kennedy, as we reported, at Ohio is all clear, but the Kennedy is just completely jammed up in both directions. It's our slowest moving expressway right now, which is
do not tell people how we snuck around it. I don't want people taking our route.
And then further northwest on I-90, as the Kennedy turns into the Jane Addams, we have a medical emergency on the Jane Addams outbound at Roselle Road that's blocking the left lane. So it looks like an ambulance crew is on the scene there for whatever's going on. But that's causing a slowdown as you get further northwest on I-90 at Roselle
Road. You're going to have a grabber, at least pull over.
That's right. Southside expressways have been behaving themselves all morning, so no issues there. So that's good news. Weather today, more good news. Lots of sunshine, warm temperatures, a bit warmer than the last few days, but still not unpleasant. A high of 84. Right now it is crystal clear and 77 degrees downtown. For our Phoenix listeners, partly cloudy with a high of 98 today. Right now it's clear and 80. In sports, White Sox lost the final game of their four-game set with Oakland 5-4 yesterday afternoon. They did take the first three games and won 3 out of 4 in a series against a good team, but lost the back-and-forth affair yesterday. Cubs were off. They'll welcome the Kansas City Royals into town for some interleague action at Wrigley. That's a 1:20 Chicago time first pitch. Diamondbacks are playing good ball of late, even though they're the worst team in baseball. They beat up on the Phillies yet again. 6-2 was the final last night. Chief.
Carl, you're very well written on this stuff or well read, but I don't know. I've not, our listeners maybe have the same, ignorance about this, that I do. I'm curious, what exactly is the difference in how it affects your body? Now, I don't know if you know exactly, you're not Carl immunologist, but what is the difference between, like, a measles vaccine that appears to last a lifetime and nobody even questions it, a tetanus kind of thing where after 10 years you need a booster, but for the 10 years seems to work very, very well, and what this thing is somewhat of a flu shot where it gives you the antibodies and everybody's always worried about them dropping, but maybe not dropping so fast. You have some memory, not the best memory. You're not immune, but it's not. What? How do those different things affect the body where one is so permanent you don't even check it or even question it? I mean, I guess mumps and all the rest of them are the same way like that, or polio, and yet these other ones are kind of in the middle. I mean, of the tetanus, you have to get a booster, and this one, you know, we're fighting about it all over the place. I think if you already...
There's a huge difference.
Yeah, that's what I'm asking.
The same thing is absolutely true with the flu shot, which, of course, you know, they tell you to go get every year, right? And the reason is that the match between what you get from whatever inoculation you take and whatever it is you're being protected against is the key to whether or not it remains effective and whether or not it remains durable. And then additionally, it depends on whether or not the particular bug, whatever it is reasonably static, or whether it mutates on a regular basis. And if it does, what part of it mutates? Okay, so when we started formulating these things, these jabs that we're giving out, we used and by the way, I want to know where they had this, because there was a contract that's been dug up.
Now, don't want to interrupt, but Start with measles. Why is okay, that thing permanent?
Because measles, when you get a measles shot, you get the entire coding for the measles.
Okay.
So as far as your body knows, you had the measles.
Oh, okay. All right.
Okay? You got, from the shot, the measles. You didn't get sick, but you got the measles. And as a result, you're sterile against the measles.
So it's they give you like the dead whole virus or something, and you pick it up as if it was still alive or something like that?
Your body thinks you got the measles.
Okay.
Okay, and it builds the immune response as if you actually had measles. Okay, so now if I walk into a room, because I've been inoculated against the measles, and there's 25 people in there that all have the measles, I am not going to get the measles unless I did not build an adequate immune response originally, which does occasionally happen once in a great while, and this is the legitimate breakthrough that people talk about.
Okay.
Okay, and every once in a while, because, you know, humans are different, right? I mean, we're all distinct individuals. And you could be immune compromised when you're young and you get the shot. I mean, it can happen that you don't build a response. But in essentially everybody, you do. So the thing is, for example, with tetanus, you need to have a certain titer, a certain amount of recall that happens quickly enough. Otherwise, you can end up getting lockjaw. All right, so what they say is, you know, look, if you've had if you work around where the exposure is somewhat likely, you know, you have rusty nails, you're in farming and whatever, every 10 years you ought to go get a booster, right? And if you have some kind of a puncture wound, go get one now if you haven't had one for 10 years. And that's the reason. But then you have, for example, the flu shot, which is formulated every year, and if it's a good match between what circulates, and they have to guess because they start putting this thing together a year in advance, and they have to grow it in chicken eggs, and you never know what circulates, you know, what's going to circulate next fall. If it's a good match, it works pretty well. If not, it does nothing. Okay, because the antibodies that you have are a bad match against whatever it is you get challenged with, and your body just says, well, you know, I'm getting challenged, and it sends the wrong thing, and nothing happens, and you get the flu. Well, when we developed this, we took the sequence, and by the way, the data, there's contracts that this sequence that was given to all these companies, to Moderna and everybody else, was actually out there and was being transferred around under contract in November and December 2019. Now, tell me how that happened if this thing just showed up in January and February, all right, because it's fact that it happened. All right, so... But the problem is, we just used this part of the spike coding from the virus, and it's from the wild type, the original strain that was over in Wuhan. That strain hasn't circulated anywhere in the world in the last 6 months. It's gone.
So we eradicated what we started out to eradicate, basically.
We didn't eradicate it. The virus mutated. It does what viruses always do, and coronavirus is notorious for doing this. The spike part of the virus and the part that binds and actually gets into your cells mutates all the time. It's the reason we've never managed to successfully come up with a vaccine before, because that part of it mutates, and if you try to use the entire thing, you run the risk of what's called antibody-dependent enhancement. When we've tested them before, it has happened every time, and in animal trials, we stopped them because it killed all the animals. So they thought that if we didn't use that part of the virus that they thought caused this problem, that we would avoid, you know, the oops, you get challenged with it later and it kills you. All right, maybe so. Maybe so. Unfortunately, the part that we used is the part that mutates, and as a result, now it doesn't do much of anything at all against the parts that, you know, the particular strains that are circulating today. And you cannot possibly stay ahead of this. The virus mutates faster than you can reformulate the jabs.
Well, but the people who've already had it, they essentially have the whole thing, and they should be okay,
well, right,
at least for a while. But why are those people given no respect whatsoever? You can't say I already had it. Like, I can walk in and say I already had the measles, leave me alone, and they do.
Well, it's because we're stupid. There is zero evidence that the protection you get from actual infection wanes unless your immune system was badly compromised and you never built protection, which does happen occasionally to people. It happens with the measles. It happens with everybody else. It is theoretically possible to get the measles twice. Okay, it's theoretically possible. It almost never happens, but it's theoretically possible. It's theoretically possible to get chickenpox twice too. But again, it almost never happens. And the same thing is true here. There is zero scientific evidence that if you've had COVID, that you are at risk of a second attack. Now, that doesn't mean it can't occur. Of course it can occur. But statistically speaking, no, it doesn't. You are sterile. You are the firebreak if you've had this disease and recovered from it.
You should be the person who goes to work every day, drives the bus, and doesn't worry about it.
You should be the person that goes into the hospital and takes care of all the people who have COVID.
Well, that too. All right, let's shift gears to where we got the Fed involved. They're talking about, I heard five people talking the other day about the taper, and they're talking about instead of $130 billion a month going down to $120 or something. Is the goal here really to separate the haves from the have-nots once and for all? I mean, what are we doing?
I don't know, but I think that the institutional memory and the knowledge is that every time that the Fed has tried to pull back, the market has had a hissy fit.
Well, but okay. Why shouldn't it? Because they're the only thing holding it up.
Well, exactly. But here's an interesting thing. You know, we talked about lumber months ago, right? That it was going, that it was absolutely skyrocketing. Do you realize that the price that LBS lumber futures have crashed?
Yeah.
They're currently down below November 2020 numbers right now.
Well, that's because your housing and stuff is starting to go down.
Well, but you know, they're building a house right across the pretty much the last lot in the subdivision. They're actually putting a house up, and now all of a sudden the wood showed up and the sheath and everything else. Because hey, guess what? It's not $100 a sheet anymore. It's $20.
Well, I mean, how fast has it gone down at Home Depot?
I don't know, but the truck showed up, a week ago with a load of lumber, and they're erecting it now.
But I would hope that, the man spent a life studying this stuff, and he was pretty darn good at it, Milton Friedman. When you start chasing individual things, oh, well, oil's up because of this, lumber's up because of this, and oh, by the way, now it's back there. The general price level, it's like the market right now. If the Fed puts $8 billion a day into the system, we can have a couple of down days, we can have a couple of up days, but at the end of the day, we're gonna, okay, it's market's rotating, rotate on this, as we used to say. So consumer something, they're going down and banks are going up. And the next day, all right, well, of course, if you, in a perfect world, and that's what I do all day, is trade this stuff, I would love to be long the consumers the one day and short the banks the next day. But what I know is, Carl, is that the pool just keeps getting filled up. And if all of a sudden...
Yeah, well, they keep pouring water in the pool, even though there's a big hole at the bottom.
Yeah, but now, if they turn back the other way, here's what I maybe you have a better view because you watch this. What do you think the Fed has to actually buy? Now, given the stuff that they've bought, and it's mostly U.S. debt, it's 80, what's it, they own, every month they buy 80 billion of what, U.S. debt and 50 of other stuff. Well, there isn't a market, I use the term, you can trust. I mean, the thing that frosts me the most is when somebody says, well, you think the Fed's like doing this wrong, but the market likes it. Well, of course, they're feeding the market. It's like, somebody was talking, I read an article yesterday about the tips. They're not foretelling any real inflation.
Right.
The Fed is buying the tips. Once you get involved in a market, the market is no longer telling you anything, is it?
Well, that's you can tamper around the edges and not do that. But once you become a significant percentage of it, yeah, you are the market. And what I would say, I mean, like this last week, I think most of this is all OPEX games. Okay, this is all people that are on the wrong side, and all this stuff expires and rolls off here, for the month. But then remember, we got Quadwich, which comes next month, right, in September. And that one, there's, from what I've seen in some of the internals looking at it, looking at the data, it's one of the things that I kind of keep an eye on. the skew there is ridiculous. And I would be very, very careful going into September, because as you know, at some point, people that are on the wrong side of those bets are going to have to unwind them, or they're going to end up getting assigned, which, of course, is a nightmare if you're on the wrong end of it, right?
Well,
those positions are going to get unwound. And when they are, I think there could be quite a bit of violence. But my guess is you're going to see a sizable bounce here. Probably not today. Maybe when we get past about 2 o'clock this afternoon, you'll start to see things stabilize and head upward. And then the next couple of weeks. But after that, I would be really careful.
But doing what there's like different levels here. I happen to agree with you. I mean, yesterday, I mean, when the market was down 2 days in a row, actually, yesterday was the third morning, you know, and I wasn't like I did some rolls, so I actually did get a little longer. And that's the stuff that I do. Just our routine things we do when the market's down gets us a little longer, and the routine things we do when the market's up gets us a little shorter. So, and I think more people would like to be appraised of that, but they, you know, whatever. We still can handle a few more clients, Carl, not very many, but a few. But what we're talking about, you and I are talking about the market, and we're talking about the S&Ps, and we're talking about, but underneath that, there's hundreds of stocks that are at prices that, unless the Fed like triples the money supply, will not grow into that number. I was looking, and again, do not sell any of this stuff. This is not investment advice. But I looked at Lululemon. It just happened to be up or down a bunch yesterday, so I check it out. Stock's trading, what, two something? It's trading, where are we at?
It's crazy.
We're 396. They make like $5 a share, Carl.
Yeah, the valuations are insane. And the thing is that if the realized inflation numbers within the public, okay, where it actually starts biting people, and I'll tell you one of the places it's going to start, and I've been talking about this for a while, the data is already out there, it's going to start hitting people in the next couple of months, is all those people who have Obamacare health insurance policies.
Oh, yeah.
I am seeing numbers 25 to 40% premium increases.
These are numbers that are unconscionable. But because we have won, how's that for a word? We have won the $3,000 check to me and others. Well, I didn't get them, but to most people, it is exactly the same. And it's exactly us having the world's biggest, fattest prime rib dinner and winging a bone to my dog Scruff. He's happy as a clam because he never saw the rest of the roast. he says is his bone sounds pretty good. Nobody flipped me one of these before, and I'm pretty happy. And that's the population is convinced. I mean, I don't know how. Well, think of this, Carl. I'm not going to accuse people of being dumb because they aren't. But I think it comes down to there's nothing they can do about it. And I got a $3,000 check if I got all the stuff, which a lot of people, and maybe more if you had family, obviously. But I go to buy a used car, and it was $5,000, and now it's $10,000. Even if I put the entire $3,000, I'm still behind.
But the problem is that when this starts to bite is when it gets into your daily living and your daily budget. And the places where you can't avoid it are things like, for example, if you're self-employed and you have to buy your own health insurance.
But it's happening for the people we started the show talking about, the people who, quote, don't pay income tax. Or maybe don't pay very much. The people that were totally ragging on that they're taking their unemployment and not coming to work. Nobody says, gee, the guy that commutes from Hammond to downtown now, the toll went from 450 to 580 on the Skyway, which is a friggin' mile long or 2 miles long.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, now it's essentially $12 a day just for the guy to drive over the bridge.
Which, by the way, is an hour
pay.
Well, especially when you include the taxes and everything, yeah. Even if he's making fairly decent money, it's an hour of his pay.
And nobody connects this together. They expect somebody to work. I mean, especially, it's a bad day for me and the CNBC people because I hate it when people says that about the taxes, but I've already talked about that. I mean, you can't, I went into, where was I? I got my oil changed at Walmart, right? So the people I'm staying with this lady down in Indiana, So I figured, you know what, I'll get some, I've already got some nice bagels, I'll go grab some cream cheese and something else. So I think, I don't know what I bought like a couple of things of cream cheese and some other cheese for the office, and because we have a kitchen here and there's no restaurants open downtown.
Right.
And I bought something, I looked at the cart, it was $40. I mean, the idea that somebody would have to work 4 hours to buy two things of cream cheese, a brick of Swiss, and whatever else I got, I think I got a thing of laundry detergent, to think that that's worth 4 hours' work is insanity. It's absolute insanity.
Yeah. Yeah.
I mean...
But the thing is this, is that that squeeze is being picked up to a large degree and has been over the last year and a half by all the, you know, the handouts and everything else. Well,
right.
Guess what? That stuff eventually has to stop because it keeps pressing back into price.
Well, sure it does.
But when it gets pulled back, then all those things that are out there selling at 300 times earnings, all of a sudden are going to have a problem.
Well, but if you now that you're back out in the world, if you go grab a cup of coffee somewhere this morning, sit down someplace, maybe have some breakfast. I don't know if you, well, here you got to do masks again, but you're going to hear by noon 15 people telling you that this place can't get somebody to work $12 an hour because the government spent. I mean, I'm not saying that was the world's best idea by government. I wouldn't have done it that way. But there's no... First of all, Carol, with this PPP, is there ever going to be an accounting there? I've gone through this stupid thing in Illinois. Well, it's not stupid. They tell you everybody who's gotten money. Okay, now the problem is, a lot of restaurants, the name of the company isn't the same as the restaurant, right?
Right.
So you can't necessarily match them up. But I'm doing a little better since one of my friends in the liquor industry lets me know the corporate name. So I'm doing a little better at it. But, I mean, so somebody gets $1 million. There's no audit trail that says, say PTI had, 300 people working here. And we got some huge number. We actually, were shut in Chicago. We were shut down except people that got here over the one bridge that was open. And we, just because we take care of clients, that's what we do. But to say that it was a hardship, Carl, is an understatement, right? So if anybody was partially shut down, it was us and Lakeside Bank and those people down here. Anyway,
right.
So suppose we'd have gotten $1 million. I believe the audit for us to be forgiven was that we had to pay, you probably know better than me, 80 or 85% of the money out in salaries, correct? Something like that?
Yeah, exactly.
But nobody ever said, did you keep everybody? I could have fired half the people, doubled my salary and the remaining people, and it still would have counted.
And you know what? And an awful lot of people did. And I have seen this with businesses that are now, they basically screwed all the people that worked for them.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Right? They found ways to game the system and pocket the cash and screwed the people. Well, guess what? Now the labor market is so tight that those people that they screwed are putting up the middle finger and leaving.
Well, but also, if somebody whines to you somewhere at a restaurant that was able to stay open and do carry out, if he whines to he or she, says, I can't hire anybody. Joe, I just saw Pete's Pizza got $500,000 last year from the government to keep these people here. If you kept them here, why would you have to hire anybody? Well, I didn't really keep them.
Right.
Oh, really? I mean, United, how much money did United get to keep pilots? Oh, we can't find pilots. What do you mean you can't find them? We just gave you all the dough to keep paying them. Right? I mean,
because they gained it is what they did.
Isn't that the American way? I thought that was the Chicago way. Mike Royko said, what is the actual... motto of Chicago, I believe, is "I will." Right, right, Carl. And Mike Marco said it.
But you know what? The scamming has always gone on. But any time that you open up the monetary spigots, people are going to try to play games. They did it this time, and now all of a sudden, oops! Now we got problems.
Well, Royko felt it should be changed to "Where's mine?"
Well, yeah.
On that note, Carl, have a nice weekend, buddy. SP Futures down, way down too. NASDAQ up 26. We're turning the bus around again today. We'll see if it hangs in there. I'll be back on Monday, Stocks and Jacks.
You're still here? It's over. Go home. Go.
Stocks and Jocks is brought to you by PTI Securities and Futures. Go to ptisecurities.com. PTI Pro Direct. Trade for as low as a penny per share and a dollar per option contract. Learn more at ptiprodirect.com. Nadex. Offering an intuitive way to trade the financial markets. Visit nadex.com. Home Source Realty. Call Audrey Johnson at 708-349-3456. Hanzi Analytics.
Listen to Fari Hamzy every other Thursday and visit HamzyAnalytics.com. ChiroMed, back or neck pain? Schedule a complimentary consultation by calling 708-403-2727. Dax Research. Tune in for David Andelman's technical analysis on Mondays and Thursdays and call 1-800-821-4968.